Good evening. After days of increasingly violent rhetoric against the FBI on right-wing social media and elsewhere, in the wake of the FBI search of the former president's Florida mansion and attempts to discredit the bureau by Republican lawmakers and certain cable channels, it now appears we've seen the first deadly consequences. An armed man killed in a shootout after trying to breach the FBI's Cincinnati office. Someone whose name is on a social media account spelling out in vivid detail the war he apparently believed he was launching. CNN's Bryn Gingras is doing the reporting on the deeply troubling story, joins us now with the latest. Bryn, what happened, first of all, and what are you learning about the suspect?
Yeah, so Anderson, we've learned from multiple sources that the suspect's name is Ricky Schiffer, 42 years old. Investigators are still trying to figure out if he has what kind of a connection he may have with right-wing extremist groups. But what happened earlier today was at the Cincinnati field office of the FBI. Schiffer walked in there, according to our sources, armed with an AR-15-style rifle and a nail gun, and tried to breach that office. An alarm was sounded. He was pursued by enforcement, not just on the federal side, but the local and state as well. And there was a standoff for several hours in rural area of Ohio, which ended when law enforcement tried to have non-lethal ways of sort of bringing him in, tried to negotiate with him. But then he was killed in this standoff when none of that was working. And like you said, we have come across a user account on Donald Trump's social media site, Truth Social, bearing the same name of Ricky Schiffer. And authorities have not confirmed it's his account, but we do have one source telling my colleague Josh Campbell that there is a government ID matching the same picture. And in at least one post, he actually talks about this user talks about what happened at the FBI field office today. I want to read for you word for word what this post says. It says, "Well, I thought I had a way through bulletproof glass and I didn't. If you don't hear from me, it is true. I tried attacking the FBI and it'll mean either I was taken off the internet, the FBI got me, or they sent the regular cops wild." And it just sort of ends there. This post was actually about 15 minutes after we learned that this person breached the FBI office. So it's possible this person on the account wasn't able to finish that thought. And if you look deeper into this social media account, which is actually fairly new, there's not too many posts on there. There is just a ton of violent rhetoric against the FBI. This person said they were in Washington on January 6th. And there are several posts from this user talking about how they believe the election of Donald Trump in 2020 was stolen.
Did the user's postings become more violent after Monday's search in Mar-a-Lago?
Yeah, they did. And actually, there was a post hours after the news broke about the search by the FBI of Mar-a-Lago. I want to read that to you. It says, "People, this is it. I hope a call to arms comes from someone better qualified. But if not, this is your call to arms from me." And this person encourages people to go get guns, go to pawn shops, to take up arms with federal authorities. And the rhetoric gets even more violent, saying, even the next day, saying, "Go to Mar-a-Lago. And if you face any FBI agents, kill them," is what one of the posts said. So obviously, extremely disturbing rhetoric coming from this user account. We know, of course, as you already just mentioned, that the FBI has been sort of on alert after the incidents, or after the search, rather, on Monday. But right now, this investigation, it's unclear exactly the motive of Schiffer going into this field office today. That's still being investigated. But of course, maybe we'll learn something, since there were hours again of negotiation happening between federal agents and Schiffer before this standoff ended this afternoon.
Bryn Gingras, appreciate it. Thank you. More now on Attorney General Garland's decision today to call the former president's bluff on the warrant for Monday's search.
The department filed the motion to make public the warrant and receipt in light of the former president's public confirmation of the search, the surrounding circumstances, and the substantial public interest in this matter.
Now, the former president has both those documents, could himself make them public any time, something his supporters have been calling on the Justice Department to do. And now it's up to him. The federal judge handling this in Florida has given the justice until tomorrow at 3 p.m. to meet with the former president and tell the court if he objects to the unsealing. So whatever happens could happen quickly. And the attorney general set all this in motion without revealing a single detail about the investigation, something the Justice Department almost never has. So there's that. There's also new reporting tonight on the search itself, what precipitated it, and how sensitive some of the documents in question were. CNN's Evan Perez joins us with that. Evan, can you just walk us through the attorney general's decision, which is rare, to speak out publicly and then to ask the court to unseal the search warrant and inventory items?
It is rare, Anderson. And let me tell you, on Monday, Merrick Garland was a no on the idea of making a statement at all about this search, which obviously the former president went public with that statement describing it as a siege. And the former president has had, frankly, the ground to himself, right? He has had the ability to fashion the narrative about exactly what happened during the FBI search on Monday. And so what we've seen in the ensuing few days is some of the things that Bryn Greengrass was just talking about, threats against FBI agents. We've seen attacks about against their credibility, attacks saying that the FBI may have planted some evidence. And that's what really helped inform what the Attorney General did today. He stood before us and said that essentially the former president has already spoken publicly about this, and so has essentially made it okay for the Justice Department to go to the court, a very unusual step, by the way, to say that we can, you know, release these two documents. Now, the documents that we're going to get is probably not going to tell us a lot of the underlying information about this investigation, but it will tell us a few things about what the FBI took during that search, as well as possibly what crimes they are investigating. Again, that's very important information for us to learn, Anderson.
Is it clearer tonight why the government felt it needed a search warrant? Because the former president's legal team, they've tried to paint themselves as cooperating the Department of Justice all along. I know you have some new details.
Right, Anderson. And so, look, I think what you can see, even from the comments from the Attorney General today, you can get a sense that they don't believe there was that level of cooperation. We know that they issued a subpoena to the Trump team back in June, and then they have a meeting to discuss getting these records from Mar-a-Lago back in June. The FBI leaves with some documents, some highly classified documents from that meeting. We know that they reached out later on. They asked for an additional lock to be put on the room where some of these documents were still being stored. And we also know that they served a second subpoena to ask for surveillance tapes. And that leads us to the search that happened on Monday. We get a sense, Anderson, from all of this interaction that the escalation that people saw on Monday really began much earlier. It began well before that June meeting. They clearly believed that less intrusive means were not working, and that led to Monday. The Attorney General, real quickly, I'll mention in his statement, he says, where possible, it is standard practice to seek less intrusive means as an alternative to a search and to narrowly scope any search that is undertaken. That is him pointing to the fact that we tried lesser means or less intrusive means, and then we had to take this ultimate step on Monday, Anderson.
Evan Perez, appreciate it. More now on the former president and the decision he now has to make, perhaps as soon as tomorrow, seeing as Caitlin Collins joins us with that. What's the reaction so far from the former president's legal team?
Well, his orbit was pretty caught off guard, Anderson, by this announcement. It was remarkable in and of itself, as Evan just laid out. And so they were a bit caught off guard, still navigating in the hours after Attorney General Garland came out how to proceed and what they are going to do. And that involved them contacting outside attorneys. Of course, the former president has been represented by a slew of attorneys lately. He is focused on one who was present when this search happened on Monday, and another one, Evan Kerkorian, who has been defending the president and consulting with him on how to proceed going forward here. What I am told is they have not made a decision yet on how they're going to proceed. Of course, they've got that deadline by 3 p.m. tomorrow. It does appear that they are leaning toward the idea of challenging this, of objecting to the idea of unsealing this search warrant as the Justice Department laid out today, though, just to be clear, they have not made a decision yet. And so that remains to be seen where they are going to go from here. But certainly this is something they were not expecting for the Attorney General to come out to do, as really, Anderson, for the last several days, it's been Trump and his allies driving the narrative about this search until, of course, the Justice Department came out today to talk about it.
Caitlin, stay with us because we have new reporting tonight in The Washington Post. And the headline reads, FBI searched Trump's home to look for nuclear documents. I want to bring in Daniel. This is crossing right now. I want to bring in Daniel Goldman, a former 10-year veteran of the Justice Department. He was also Democratic counsel in the former president's first impeachment hearing. He's now running for Congress in New York's 10th District. Also joining us is former federal judge Nancy Gertner. She's currently a senior lecturer at Harvard Law School. Judge Gertner, when we spoke earlier this week, you said that something of this magnitude would have been signed off on by the attorney general himself. We learned today you were certainly right. What do you make of his decision to seek to make public the warrant and the receipt of the items taken.
I thought it was a brilliant move. I mean, one of the things he said, which is that, you know, we don't usually comment about cases, and that makes perfect sense, but we only comment through our filings. And at the moment he was saying that, they were filing a motion to unseal the document. I mean, it was really brilliant. He wasn't really going off the script. Public documents are obviously something about which he can comment. And so at that moment, he had created, in one sense, a justification to speak publicly about this. I thought it was absolutely brilliant to do this. Trump is in an interesting position. On the one hand, if he opposes the unsealing of this, which he has a right to do, and if the judge nevertheless releases it, which who knows what the judge would do, you know, he would try to sort of set up an argument later down the line that there was, you know, undue, if he ever get convicted, ever get charged, that there was undue publicity. It'd be very hard for Donald Trump to make that argument since he was the source of the publicity. But I thought it was a brilliant move on the part of Merrick Garland.
Daniel, the Washington Post, as I mentioned, reporting tonight, quote, classified documents relating to nuclear weapons were among the items FBI agents sought in a search of former President Donald Trump's Florida residence on Monday, according to people familiar with the investigation. What's your reaction to that and to all that we have seen today?
Well, I think what's been coming out and what the Attorney General did today reveals a couple of things. First of all, if you believe all of the reporting, it is clear that Donald Trump did not satisfactorily comply with a grand jury subpoena to turn over all of the documents that he had that he should not have had, that were classified. And that's why they had to do the search warrant. I said on Tuesday, right after this happened, that it is very likely that there is a witness who can pinpoint exactly what remained there, and there's been reporting that that is the case. Now, Merrick Garland is coming out, and he is saying, hey, if you're going to bash us, and if you're going to twist things around, then show us the receipts. Donald Trump won't do that. So he's going to the court, and I'm very interested to see what the statutes are that are listed on that search warrant, because it could range from anything. And now that we have this information about nuclear information, you know, it could range from nuclear information. It could range from evidence potentially that he has been sharing classified information to other people. There's a wide range of things, and I do think that the statutes will give us an indication of what this investigation is all about. But I do, you know, he's in a pickle right now, because if he does not oppose, then we're going to find that out. If he does oppose, then he's clearly hiding something.
Caitlin, if the Washington Post reporting is accurate and they were looking for nuclear documents, why? What do you, I mean, do anyone you talk to in Trump orbit have any explanation for why the former president of the United States would be holding on to whether it's nuclear documents or any classified documents in a closet or a basement at Mar-a-Lago? Does that, I mean, is there an explanation for this?
Not so far that we've heard. And I think the confusion that even some of his own allies have is why, when there was clearly an effort, a fervent effort by the National Archives to get a hold of the documents that he had taken with him to Mar-a-Lago, did they send 15 boxes, but not everything? And that was what investigators had suspected. That is part of the reason why they went down there on June 3rd and met with his attorneys and looked at the room where these documents were being held. And clearly they were concerned with the security of these documents, because I was told that 5 days later, they got an email from these investigators saying, you need to further secure the room. They didn't specifically tell them to put a padlock on the door, but that is what they did. And I think that's really why there's been such concern about this and about what it was that he took with him, not just simply that it was a memento or a document, but that if it is something that could compromise national security related information.
I mean, this is the person who, you know, dined out on Hillary Clinton's, you know, server like it was an all you can eat buffet. I mean, this is what he ran on. And the idea that he would then hoard classified documents, I mean, I'm eager to hear any explanation from anybody in Trump orbit about this.
Well, I think, Anderson, also it's not just Trump. It's also several of the Republicans that you're hearing from who were calling on the attorney general to release the warrant have been very quiet today since he came out and said, we are actually trying to release, unseal the warrant, the search warrant, and make it publicly known. A lot of those Republicans were the same ones who also were heavily critical of Hillary Clinton for how she handled her private emails. And so I think this is a situation where it could be complicated, because what we've heard so far from allies of the former president is that they'll say he already declassified everything, because as the president, he has the power to declassify things. But when things are declassified, they say declassified on them.
There's a process.
There is a process. Right. It could potentially get very complicated here.
It's not the president saying, I hereby declassify this. I mean, there's a like an actual process. Judge Gertner, CNN's reporting, as I mentioned, that the 15 boxes retrieved in January by the National Archives contained some materials that were part of special access programs, a classification that includes protocols to significantly limit who would have access to the information, according to a source familiar with what the archives discovered in the boxes. What legal impact could that have? I mean, does the level of classification matter?
Well, I think the fact of classification matters. My understanding is that the documents that are classified are clear on their face. And also, you ask the why question, and we want to ask the why question because it really doesn't make sense. But the why question is actually irrelevant. With respect to classification, the fact of unauthorized possession, when you think about David Petraeus sharing that with his biographer, or Sandy Berger just taking documents from the National Archives, the why doesn't matter. It is the fact of it, and that's all you need. Who knows why he would have done it? But it's unimaginable that he would. And clearly, the higher level of classification justifies this even more. But people are making it appear as if it's a technical violation. This is not a technical violation. This is, this is a violation for which there's a whole administrative apparatus to make sure that classified information doesn't get out.
Yeah.
So, the protocol makes a difference. But as apropos of your last question, it's not like there's a magic wand. You know, he walks out the door and he says, okay, everything is declassified.
Yeah.
Obviously, they have to.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. If you could just stand by, everyone, I want to bring Josh Dawsey, who shares a byline on the Washington Post article. Josh, what more can you tell us about these documents related to nuclear weapons that you and your colleagues report were being sought by FBI agents at Mar-a-Lago?
Well, what we've learned is that the federal government, the FBI, was working with subpoenas. They were working cooperatively with the Trump folks. And then at some point this summer, they decided to take a more aggressive take, partially because of what they were concerned that was there. Documents about nuclear programs, and multiple sources said that escalated their desire, that they believe those documents were there, to get in immediately. And it's one thing that our sources have explained to us is why, such a step was taken like it was on Monday.
Is there any reason, according to your sources, that a former president would have these particular kinds of documents in his possession and not have turned them over in the initial, cache of documents that were turned over?
Not that I'm aware of, Anderson, no. I mean, former presidents often take things with them that they return back in time. That's happened with other, there have been handovers in the past. But the scope of what former President Trump took, 15 boxes, had to give back the first time. Again, they took 12 more boxes out the other day, according to his lawyer. And the content of what he took really make this a totally different kind of experience.
Do you have any more information on the level of classification of these documents?
We know that a lot of the things that was found there were top secret, the highest levels of classification you could find. He had a lot of documents marked with that. And then some of the documents they had taken back, there were several pages of a classified inventory, my colleague Jackie Alemany reported. So there was, extensive documents that the federal government felt were classified, and some of them were even marked top secret.
Josh Dawsey, I appreciate the reporting from you and your colleagues. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I want to go back to the panel here. Daniel, a little bit more information there from Josh Dawsey. What sort of timeline do you think the Department of Justice is on now? Not just related to this subpoena, but does this give any window into their investigations?
Well, I do think that it is showing that this investigation related to the classified documents is significantly escalating and is moving quite quickly. My guess is this is the last resort. We have indication that they've interviewed a number of witnesses. But the questions that Josh raises and that you raised earlier about the nuclear documents are particularly important when you consider the fact that this has been going on for 7 months. He's known that there's been an interest in these documents for 7 months. He received a subpoena for them. So the question is really important to ask. What is he doing and why is he continuing to obstruct this investigation to hold on to these documents? It's one thing if you're informed that you have documents that need to be turned over and you say, okay, I'll turn them over. It's entirely a different thing when you're being asked over and over and compelled to do it and you don't. And it begs the question, what are you doing with those documents? Because it's not simply just to put them in a picture frame on a wall. There's got to be some other reason why Donald Trump is hiding documents, especially scary if they are related to nuclear programs at the highest level of classification. And there are higher levels than top secret. I was on the House Intelligence Committee, as you know, Anderson, and there are secured compartmental information, which, as Judge Gertner said, is super duper top secret stuff that very few have access to.
And Caitlin, I asked you if there was any explanation for why you would have classified documents, and you said from people in Trump orbit, not as of yet. Have you heard any explanation for why they would not have turned over all the documents initially?
No, that's been a big question that even some of his own allies have raised of why not just turn them over? If it was so clear to you how desperately the National Archives was trying to get a hold of these, that they referred it to the Justice Department for an investigation, which is why we are in the position that we are in now of this situation with Garland coming out today to talk about this. And instead, for the last several days, the president's attorneys have been framing this as we were cooperating all along. We were kind of shocked by the idea that this search happened on Monday and totally caught off guard. Well, what they left out initially was that there was this subpoena. There was this other step that, of course, as we reported on Monday, these investigators did go down to Mar-a-Lago to see this. They had a very clear interest in these documents. And so I think that's why it's raised the question of what could potentially be in there. And I think on Monday, you heard a lot of Republicans very critical of this search. And I think now if it does come out and it is confirmed that these were documents related to the national security of the United States or nuclear weapons programs for other nations, that is going to potentially quiet them some, because obviously that is not something that can just be hanging out at the former president's primary residence in Florida, where obviously it's not under the kind of lock and key that it typically would be.
Yeah. Caitlin Collins, Daniel Goldman, Nancy Gertner, appreciate it. Thank you. Coming up next, a former attorney general's take on what the current attorney general is doing. We'll talk to Alberto Gonzalez, Judge Alberto Gonzalez, what he thinks of the search, the former president's response in today's attempted attack on the FBI, and later what the January 6th committee has been up to, most notably with cooperation from members of the former president's cabinet. More AC360 to come after the break. Whether it's the home of a former president searched by the FBI or that same former president taking the Fifth or Attorney General Garland's move today, this week has been a week of first evers and almost nevers. As such, it's good to get a former attorney general's take on things. In this case, Alberto Gonzalez, who served in the George W. Bush administration. I spoke to him just before airtime. Judge Gonzalez, what is your reaction to the attorney general's decision to not just speak publicly about the search of Mar-a-Lago, but also to move to unseal the warrant and the inventory list of the items that were seized?
You know, watching the press conference by the attorney general, I was surprised by the unsealing. The rest of the comments were very consistent with what I might have expected in terms of simply confirming that he authorized the search so that the American people don't come to the conclusion we have a rogue agency here. We have rogue agents operating at the Department of Justice. And so I think that he also confirmed the fact that, this was done as sort of a last resort in that typically, you ask for the information And then you try to get the information through a subpoena. And I think he confirmed that they typically would go through less intrusive means.
In terms of the move to unseal, do you think it's the right move? Because there are those who are saying, look, this is calling the former president's bluff. The supporters of the former president were saying, well, you know, they should release the information of what was taken. And now they seem to be moving to try to do that.
Yeah, I think why not? Obviously, there were extraordinary circumstances, I think, that led him to that decision, given the fact that the former president is out there talking about the seizure. And so it's no surprise that he's under some kind of investigation. And given the obviously tremendous public interest, it's understandable that he would pursue this course of action and educate the American public generally about the way the department works, how our criminal justice system works. And I think given the circumstances here, it was the right decision.
The gunman who tried to breach an FBI field office in Ohio today, according to authorities, had posted on the former president's social media platform referencing an attempt to storm an FBI office and also encouraged others online to prepare for a revolutionary type war. Obviously, the FBI was under your purview as attorney general. What's your reaction to that? Not only the rhetoric that preceded it, but also the action itself. Do you worry about what it portends?
No question about it. I mean, this is why the kind of rhetoric that has followed the disclosure of the seizure, in my judgment, it is so dangerous, because we have people out there that we've seen as a result of the January 6th riots on Capitol Hill, who are going to respond with violence at the direction, the suggestion, the encouragement of the former president. And so to the extent that he's making any public statements that call into question the integrity of the FBI, the integrity of the search, to suggest that the FBI may have planted evidence, that's the kind of rhetoric that's going to incite anger, distrust. And as a result of that, people are going to engage in violence, those who, are big supporters of the president. And so, yes, I'm very worried about the fact that we may see additional violence as a result of the actions taken this previous Monday.
I mean, it was extraordinary to see, you know, Senator Lindsey Graham, who's on the Judiciary Committee, on another network the other night on Fox, as the host was talking about the FBI, saying, we know they plant evidence, we know they lie. Lindsey Graham was nodding along with it and sort of saying yes as the host was going on. What would your message be to fellow Republicans about the moment that we are in and the rhetoric?
Well, I think it's extremely dangerous. I really do. And with respect to Lindsey Graham, he's on the Judiciary Committee. If, in fact, there's this kind of misconduct going on within the Department of Justice, they have oversight authority over the Department of Justice. And that oversight authority is extremely important to ensure that there is not this conduct doesn't occur. And so if in fact he has any kind of indication or suggestion that it is occurring, why aren't they doing something about it? Mm. And the reason is because they don't have any evidence of it, any indication that's going on. And so in particular, coming from a member of Congress, to not immediately reject that kind of rhetoric is very, very disappointing. And unfortunately, that's the world that we live in today. And the politics have become so poisonous. It's okay to have significant disagreements over issues, but we need to be civil and we need to be honest about these disagreements. Yeah.
Judge Gonzalez, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, we're going to have more on the breaking news on the Ohio attack. Also, CNN's Drew Griffin speaking with a Republican Florida state representative after he called on the state to end ties with the Justice Department and to defund the FBI. More on our breaking news out of Ohio. The armed suspect who died in a shootout with police after trying to breach the Cincinnati FBI office. The attack, as we mentioned, comes after repeated condemnation of the FBI from allies of the former president over the search of his mansion in Florida. Now, one of those figures is Florida State Representative and congressional candidate Anthony Sabatini. CNN senior investigative correspondent Drew Griffin spoke with Sabatini about his far-fetched proposals.
And I am the threats are out in the open.
I will make sure these tyrants pay the price.
And online. Garland needs to be assassinated. War. This is war. Go buy ammo. The FBI so concerned, Director Chris Wray sent out a memo to the agency reviewed by CNN. It says, "Let me also assure you that your safety and security are my primary concern right now. Security Division is working across the agency as we continue to stay vigilant and adjust our security posture accordingly."
Violence against law enforcement is not the answer, no matter what anybody's upset about or who they're upset with.
In Florida,
how's it going?
Ultra-MAGA Republican, Florida State Representative Anthony Sabatini, is trying to take right-wing outrage one step further.
If it was up to me, I would totally defund the FBI.
I'm Anthony Sabatini.
He's running for Congress in Florida's 7th District and has been making the rounds on far-right media after writing a tweet saying sever all ties with DOJ immediately. And any FBI agent conducting law enforcement functions outside the purview of our state
should be arrested upon sight.
Common sense.
Because?
Well, because what they're doing is unlawful. It's time to actually start protecting the rights of Floridians under the 10th Amendment and push back against a lawless federal government.
Right now, today, in Florida, FBI agents are chasing down bank robbers, organized criminals, attacking cyber crime in this state, helping local law enforcement.
You don't think there's any value in that? It's an illogical argument. The FBI at this point is totally useless. We need to defund it and
you
let
have
red
no
states.
Idea. What the value of the FBI is.
Yes, I do.
Is a former president just above the law no matter what?
The FBI is not above the law.
If I'm saying they followed the law, which they did, to enter into that home, should that just not be allowed? The president, the former president, is above the law.
He's a political target. He's being harassed by a lawless, rogue
above the law.
Agency.
It's not a lawless agency.
They spied on him. They have no respect for
you
him.
Have no idea.
They hate the conservatives. They hate the Republicans.
Wouldn't it be prudent to wait and see what the facts are before
we already have
such a
facts.
Draconian statement?
We have enough facts.
In fact, he doesn't have the facts behind the search warrant. Former President Trump does, yet so far is refusing to release them. Meanwhile, FBI agents across the country are now being forced to watch their backs for doing their jobs.
And Drew Griffin joins us now. You know, there's some like ultra-right, the MAGA folks who are cynical and know what he said. You know, I can't tell. Does he know what he's saying is absurd or does he actually believe it?
You know, that's a question I always ask myself when I meet these people and I meet the ultra mega members of Congress. They raise money off of this stuff. They get on TV because of this stuff. They go on their various podcasts because of this stuff. And you never are quite sure if they're just pandering to the emotions of a public that will vote for them and shell money to them, or if they truly do believe it. And this guy, I can't really tell.
Yeah, he does not have the facts, though, as you point out. Drew Griffin, appreciate it. Attorney General Merrick Garland today addressed the attacks against the FBI and Justice Department, saying he will not stand by silently.
Every day, they protect the American people from violent crime, terrorism, and other threats to their safety while safeguarding our civil rights. They do so at great personal sacrifice and risk to themselves.
Some of the most violent and outrageous threats have also been directed at the judge believed to have signed off on the search warrant. One social media comment under a picture of the judge even read, quote, "I see a rope around his neck." My next guest knows firsthand how dangerous attacks against our public officials can be. Her son was killed, her husband shot in 2020 after an attacker came to her home. She says the attacker was a lawyer who was seeking revenge after being angered by the pace of a lawsuit he'd filed in her court. Joining me now is U.S. District Judge Esther Salas. Judge Salas, I appreciate you being with us. Given what you have been through, what's your reaction to this reporting out of Ohio tonight about this armed man who reportedly tried to storm an FBI building, as well as the threats being made against the judge who signed off on the search of Mar-a-Lago?
It's just reinforcement. It's reinforcement that we need to pass the Daniel Anderle Judicial Security and Privacy Act. We need to start protecting members of the judiciary. The threats against the judiciary, Mr. Cooper, have they're rising in intensity and in volume. And it's not getting any better since my only child was killed just 2 years ago in July. This is a moment for all of us to take a breath, for all of us to say, facts matter, words matter, what we say to one another, what we are doing to one another and what we're doing to this country. We are ripping this country apart. And we are ripping this country apart because we are unwilling to remember that we are one country, one democracy, and we are, you know, our justice system falls under one constitution. We are doing some serious damage to one another. And I say to the American people and to our political leaders, let's get back to running this country. Let's get back to protecting judges. This is fundamentally the system this country was founded on. You know, and I am sad.
You hear that candidate talking to our Drew Griffin. I mean, do you think the public fully grasps what happens to a democracy and the rule of law when judges and public servants and, you know, FBI officers become targets for violence?
You know, I think we need to look at other countries and look how other democracies were toppled. They went after the judiciary first. They went after and used insidious lies and to talk about judges as R's and as D's. We are not R's. We are not D's. We are Americans. We take an oath. And every day we do our job. And sometimes our job requires us to make unpopular decisions. But those unpopular decisions can be appealed. Those unpopular decisions, unfortunately, we have to follow the law. And I can tell you, Mr. Cooper, the day I raised my hand and put my hand on a Bible and took an oath, I no longer became anything other than the judge that has to follow the law objectively, the judge that has to apply the law to the facts to the law. And I can tell you what the American people don't understand is that the system in which these cases are assigned are random. This judge in Florida was on duty. That's why he got the case. We don't get cases and look at a roster and pick the judge because that looks like the good judge that'll follow the way we want. Let's go back to basics. Let's go back to logic.
Judge Esther Salas, I appreciate your time tonight. Thank you so much. Coming up, the latest on the January 6th committee investigation and which former cabinet officials are now cooperating or could soon be. More AC360 to come after the break. Even though the search of Mar-a-Lago has dominated the headlines, there are significant new developments in the January 6th committee's investigation. Foremost among them, what we're learning about which former cabinet and other top officials have recently testified before the committee or are negotiating to. Join me now, CNN's Sarah Murray. So what are you hearing about these former high-ranking Trump officials?
Well, my colleagues and I are learning from sources that Elaine Chao, who is the former transportation secretary and, of course, the wife of Senator Mitch McConnell, has already been interviewed by the January 6th Select Committee. She's one of a number of high-level former Trump officials who are in talks or have already agreed to be interviewed. We've also learned that Betsy DeVos, who is the former education secretary, is in talks with the committee. And Robert O'Brien, who is Trump's former national security advisor, is set to be interviewed by the committee virtually tomorrow. Now, we know, especially with these cabinet officials, the committee has been very focused on the discussions about the 25th Amendment. You know, Chao and DeVos both had conversations about the 25th Amendment, the possibility of removing Trump from office in the wake of January 6th. And both of those women resigned on January 7th.
So obviously, Chao and DeVos are two of the nine cabinet level officials who engage with the committee. Do we know who the others are and what the committee wants to know from them?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of stunning the amount of information they've already been able to get out of high-level cabinet officials. We know that Mike Pompeo, the former Secretary of State, he appeared before the committee this week. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin has appeared before the committee. Jeffrey Rosen, who is a former acting attorney general, has been. Even, you know, Eugene Scalia, who is the former labor secretary, appeared before the committee and said he encouraged Donald Trump to concede after the results of the 2020 election were clear. So I think what they're trying to get to are, you know, the sincere misgivings that were in the highest levels of the Trump administration around January 6th. And of course, any more they can learn about how serious these conversations were about trying to remove Trump from office using that 25th Amendment, Anderson.
Yeah, Sir Murray, appreciate it. Just before broadcast, I spoke about the investigation with Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren. She's a member of the January 6th committee, as well as the House Judiciary Committee. Congresswoman Lofgren, thanks for joining us. How significant, in your view, is the fact that the committee has heard directly from former Secretary Chao, former National Security Advisor O'Brien has reportedly scheduled an interview, that it may hear from former Secretary DeVos, among others?
Well, as you know, under our rules, we can't discuss the testimony, but I think we're tying up loose ends, and I think there are probably more significant matters that we're looking at than that, but we want to be thorough and complete in our investigation.
Can you say if it's clear to you how close the Trump cabinet came to invoking the 25th Amendment?
I really can't. As you know, the amendment was not invoked. One of the things that we are looking at, you know, as a committee, is various statutes, and the 25th Amendment has a provision for setting up a committee, which has never been enacted. So that's something we may look at, whether, you know, we'll come up to a recommendation, too early to say. But obviously, the amendment was not invoked, and there's been public reporting. I won't go into the testimony, but reporters and the like, that it was discussed, but ultimately that did not happen.
You're obviously also on the House Judiciary Committee, as I mentioned. I'm wondering what your reaction is to Attorney General Garland's statement today and his move to unseal the warrant and inventory list for the search of Mar-a-Lago.
I thought it was very smart. Actually, the department kept the fact of the execution of the warrant secret. It was the former president himself who announced it, so therefore they don't need to protect, you know, that information. He released it. And here's the concern. In addition, there's tremendous public interest in this, as you know. But there is also some rhetoric among some of my colleagues that I think is dangerous. For example, Paul Gosar said, the FBI raid on Trump's home tells us one thing. Failure is not an option. We must destroy the FBI. We must save America. There was an individual who was present on January 6th who tried to shoot up the FBI office in Ohio today. So there are unhinged people that are taking their lead from over-the-top rhetoric that has no information. I mean, I don't know what was in that warrant, and none of my colleagues do either. So I think getting the information out so everybody can know what the facts are would help calm tensions. It would reduce violence. It's in the public interest.
It does seem rather stunning, the number of your colleagues in the House, in the Senate, who, even if they're not directly saying incredibly potentially dangerous statements, they're sitting on programs listening as other people are saying it, and they're nodding and smiling along, as Lindsey
right.
Graham did the other night on Fox. It's how concerned are you? Do you think the danger of political violence is escalating?
I do very much so. We've already seen the incident in Ohio. Some of these right-wing online platforms, people are talking about violence just as they did before January 6th. Now, I think we need to proceed carefully, not assume the worst, but I do think ratcheting down the over-the-top rhetoric, finding out what are the facts, and then proceeding from there would be very helpful for the country. I don't understand how some of my colleagues can pop off with things they don't know anything about any more than I do, any more than you do. Let's find out what the truth is.
Congresswoman, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
You bet.
Well, a more ahead, an armed man trying to storm an FBI office in Ohio after making threats against the Bureau in the wake of the search of the former president's mansion. We'll have more on that ahead. We're ending tonight where we began, with the Ohio attack on the FBI, because this is a developing story. We'll be following it in the days ahead. Here's the latest. The man, now dead, who tried to breach the Bureau's Cincinnati office, according to law enforcement, was armed with an AR-15-style rifle and a nail gun. He's been identified as Ricky Schiffer. He was killed after a long standoff with police. The FBI is now investigating his social media presence and whether he had ties to any right-wing extremist groups. A federal law enforcement source tells CNN that authorities are looking into whether the suspect had ties to any group also that participated in the January 6th attack on the Capitol, or if he himself took part. There is a Truth Social account bearing his name, referring to his attempt to storm an FBI office and also encouraging others to prepare for a revolutionary-type war. Authorities have not yet confirmed that the account actually belongs to Schiffer, but a law enforcement source told CNN that a photo on the account matched a government ID photo of the suspect. The FBI declined to comment, citing their ongoing investigation. If you ever miss 360, you can always listen to our podcast. Go to CNN.com/podcast or any of the major platforms. Just search for Anderson Cooper 360. The news continues right now. Let's hand it over to Sarah Seidner and CNN Tonight.